Okay. So that worked. Daniel, even though I know you want your job to be done, could you push *6 and just let me know, can you hear everything well before I get started to make sure it's coming through?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine, Brenda. Thanks.
Great. Thank you so much. Okay. Okay. So I'm going to start off tonight with, I just want to say a couple of things, and then I'm going to lead you into a meditation, which is about the, again, has the quality of this work. And then I'm going to talk to you, I'd like to open it up, and I want to hear about what it was like this week for you, if you've worked with ambiguity. Okay.
This is Daniel. Is anybody else hearing, Brenda?
No.
Oh. No, I'm not hearing. I can't hear anything.
All right, thanks. It sounds like she got dropped, actually. So let's hold on for a moment, and I think she'll come back on, but we'll see.
Daniel, can you hear me?
Oh, there you are.
Okay, this is weird. I don't know why I got dropped. Okay, so we'll see how that goes. Let's hold on a sec.
So, Brenda, we're hearing you again, but you had dropped off for a minute or two.
Okay, that's not working well either. All right, I don't know what's up with the chimes, what's up with the stuff. Let's try. Give me 1 second, and I'm trying again to figure out why this is working or not working correctly. Let's see. Technology. I deliberately didn't do a streaming thing because I knew I'd have problems with the technology. And this doesn't want to cooperate either. Okay. Let's see if it works better, if there's anything I need to push. Can you hear me now fine, Daniel?
Daniel, can you hear me? Yeah, it took me a minute to unmute, but yes, we can hear you.
Okay. All right. So I'll start off again then. So I'm going to start off with saying a few words, and I'm going to lead you into a meditation. Then I'd like to know what the ambiguity homework was like for you. And then I'm going to take you into the bracketing process and talk to you about what that's like and give you an example of it. Okay. So two things that I can feel will show up here tonight is Niels Bohr, which many people may know, who was a renowned physicist who worked with quantum theory. He said, there are two quotes that I like of his that's important for tonight, which is, the opposite of a great truth is another great truth. The other thing he said was, the truth can only be found in paradox. The work we are engaged in during these classes asks us to allow truth or understanding or insight to emerge in a new way by including more of who we are and more possibilities. This includes fear and confusion and uncertainty, things we'd often rather not include. Pausing again, the whole uncertainty thing. I'm trying to figure out why the exit chimes are doing what it's doing. But okay. So a human being who's engaged in awakening into the wholeness of reality is not one who lives in a state of bliss all the time. The true human being, as some Native American tribes refer to this person, is one who's willing to engage in a relationship that is so vast that it includes all of life. We have the capacity to be someone who lives in knowing and who lives in mystery, who has an open mind and heart, even to things we may not like, who is willing to make life as it is into an ally. Okay. Life does not need to be broken down between friend or foe, friend or enemy, where we're continually caught in the trance of opposition, where only certain aspects of who we are and how life is deemed acceptable or invited into our hearts and minds. So let's start with this meditation to get into the spirit of the work we'll be doing tonight. I'd like you to just silently be with your breathing for a few minutes. Just breathe deeply and allow yourself to relax and enter into the space. Our intention in this meditation is to work with the spirit of including everything by inviting in different aspects of yourself. All the different parts of yourself, the weak and the strong, the vulnerable and the brave, the wise one and the one who doesn't know what to do. Say to yourself, you, the one who longs to be himself or herself, but is afraid, come in, be here. You, the one who is lost and confused, come in, be here. You, the one who is afraid to get it wrong, to be imperfect, come in. Be here. Can you hear me? Daniel?
Yes, Brenda. Yes, we can.
Okay. You, the one who is brave and courageous, who trusts his or her unfolding, come in, be here. You, the one who forgets to be kind to yourself, come in, be here. You, the one who remembers the unity of reality from time to time, please come in. Allow yourself to just be here in the silence and for a few minutes allow different aspects of yourself to arise, including ones that you like, sometimes you don't like, or ones that you don't like. It doesn't matter. Simply recognize and invite in different aspects of yourself. Just be here in the silence and see what appears. to be whole, we need to embrace the great paradox of inviting in everything exactly as it is. Being okay exactly as we are right now. And simultaneously be willing to grow, transform, and heal. So just allow yourself to settle in here in this space. And I'd like to open it up and see if someone would be willing to be brave and vulnerable and share what it was like for you this week working with ambiguity. So push star 6 to unmute yourself, because my star 5 unmuting doesn't seem to be working. So if you could push star 6 to unmute yourself, I'd like to hear from you. Daniel, I apologize since I'm having trouble with technology tonight. I need to know if it actually works. If you push star 6, can I hear you?
Yes, Brenda, yes.
Okay. Great.
Brenda, this is Ilana. I was wanting to give someone else a chance to go first, but I guess it's me.
I'm sorry, you were wanting to what?
Give someone else a chance to go first.
Okay.
But nobody else did, so I guess it's me.
Okay, good. Thank you for being courageous and vulnerable.
So I had a bunch of different experiences doing the homework. The first resonates with the example that you gave last week about if someone had killed Hitler before he rose to power, then maybe someone else would have risen up who would have succeeded. And so in that mode, I had kind of a sense of powerlessness of, like, wait, we're living in the best of possible worlds, and, like, there's something that's kind of, like, lulling and reassuring about thinking that I know that things could have been better in a particular way or in a particular circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was kind of a shock of, like, oh, maybe not. So that's the first one. The second is that I found it very challenging when I was writing to be in the ambiguity. I wound up kind of adopting an alternate kind of confidence of, like, oh, it wouldn't have gone this other way. It would, you know, wouldn't have gone the way that I thought. It would have gone this other way. And it was hard to be in the maybe it would have been this other way. It was like, no, I know. It would have been that.
Mm-hmm.
That was the second. And then the third is I definitely got a sense of peace. I was working through an example of an aspect of my life, and I was looking at, like, I wish I'd had more dating experience, and I realized actually what I want is confidence, and kind of looking around at other women I know who have more dating experience, they don't necessarily have more confidence, and it was useful to realize, like, oh, actually the issue isn't my life path, the issue is the projections and expectations put on it, and, like, oh, okay, what I want is confidence. Great, okay. But I think that my overall challenge was, what are things that I, like, directions that I want the world to move in versus things that I want to already be different about the world, like, snap my fingers. mm-hmm. and like how to hold on to, like, yes, I do want people to eat healthier and I don't want there to be genetically modified organisms, but like having that be a desire rather than like a grumpiness.
Mm-hmm. I have to tell you, I absolutely adore your process. I do. I absolutely adore it. I mean, I completely get the challenge in it. I completely feel the wrestling and what it brought up, and you know, so again, the difficulty of it. But the reason I adore the process is that you allowed it to change. You allowed different things to emerge. You allow the part of you that feels powerless, the part of you that wants to be powerful, you know, control the world and make it go a certain way. You allow the part of you that that hates being in ambiguity and like, oh, that's, you know, scary and, you know, naming it. You allow the part of you that wants to, you know, snap your fingers and make the world different, you know, made over in the way you think it should be. And you allow yourself to also discover something new, that you started off thinking it was about having more dating experience and you realized that it really was about confidence. It was about a completely different thing, and that's often what will happen when we work with ambiguity. We start off with a very clear idea that we think it's about this, and we wind up realizing that, no, the core of it is really something else. So I have to say I adore the process. I love what you went through. I mean, again, I get that it was hard. I'm not whitewashing that. I'm just saying you allowed it to inform you. You allowed yourself to meet it honestly, not go into a fantasy version, meaning that I'm gonna be more perfect at this. I'm gonna be more awake at this, or more, you know, enlightened around this. You allowed, you know, everything to be there. These conflicting things in which we want to control the world and we don't like it when we can't. You know, so I'm liking it. I think it's very healing and healthy that all of that appears. Mm. And it is a challenge. It's a challenge to, because when we meet ambiguity, the tendency is, as you said, to slip over into a sense of feeling powerless, that nothing we can do will make a difference, or to slip into the other side of where we, you know, try to do, you know, be in control. And to let both of those things keep coming up, so that we can find a different way that isn't about powerlessness or being all-powerful, omniscient, omnipotent, you know, but is about being in a relationship with life and being able to sort through, you know, what we really want and how we can come into relationship with life as it is and make choices and decisions that actually support us and support the world as a whole in healing. And it turns out in order to do that, we have to come into relationship with all of those things. Because most people don't want to face our sense of powerlessness or our sense of, or let ourselves see how many fantasies we have about, if I was God and I was in charge, or if I was in charge and made the king of the world or the queen of the world, this is what I'd have happen. we don't want to face those things. And yet it's healing to face those things.
Thank you.
Does that make any sense, what I'm saying, Lana?
Yeah.
So when we get in more into the bracketing process, which you're going to do tonight, we're going to talk about how to work with those things and how to allow them to exist in a particular way that is actually going to drop us down into a place that actually allows us to have more of what you discovered, where perhaps the thing that I really want is this, and also gives us more of a direction and more of a sense of things we actually can do that is neither about being powerless or about being all-powerful, but is about being a human being engaged with the world. So, yeah. You with me? So, are you with me? Is this okay?
I'm here, yeah.
Okay, so thank you.
Thank you.
So would anyone else like to be brave and vulnerable and share? Or maybe it doesn't require bravery, just the willingness to share.
Hi, Brenda. This is Sarah.
Hi, Sarah.
I would just like to empathize with Alana. So much of her process, I was right there with it all. A couple of things to add on. When I stayed with the ambiguity, there was a much more of a softening in my body.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that I still have, I mean, maybe this is a human trait, but it feels very of an immature human trait. I still have that sense of, if I can't fathom it, then it doesn't exist as a solution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when children put their hands over their eyes and they're suddenly like, there's no one there. You're like, the world is gone.
Mm-hmm.
It feels a little like that. Like, so it was nice to soften around that and go, just because I can't see the resolution other than the black or the white, this or not this, doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Just means I can't, it's not, either it's not here yet or I'm not looking in the right direction, something like that. And then that led to a very tangible kind of settling in my life over the past couple of days, where I've got some symptoms come on, and I think they're running concurrent with work, the work. And I had an idea of what might help me, but in the instant I thought of this particular vitamin supplement thing that might help the symptoms, there was an aspect of me that jumped up and said, that's too linear. Because it had drawn a straight line and assumed that it was the end of the solution rather than the next turn, the next movement. So after sitting in ambiguity for a couple of days, this thing knocked me on the side of the head of a couple more times, and I was able to follow through with it, not as the cure-all, the healing, but as a piece of the movement and unfolding, which again gave me a sense of spaciousness and mystery, and it's all somehow related, and there's still ways that I divide and black and white things. This is where it's all good, and this is where it's not all good, and this is going to work, and this is how it fixes, and coming back to the Magi has really helped me settle into not just the movement of resolution as a kind of evolutionary thing too, like something new is going to appear, but also a much less personal grasp on my life again. Like, oh, this feels more like joining in with something that already exists rather than making a stand, taking a stand and saying, this is what I want to show up. I know exactly what the answer to this is, and then going and making it happen. So that was nice, too.
Sarah, there's so much wisdom in what you said. Again, your process is exquisite. As you felt both the contracted places and this, you know, again, this deep willingness to engage in a new way. You know, the thing about the Magi process, it really has taught me, because I struggle in all the same ways that both of you named and will continue to struggle, but it has taught me this piece again and again of being willing to follow the next step, and that the intelligence of reality appears in this moment and in the next step. And my human attempt where I, which is actually a form of control, where I want to see the big picture and I want to take the big solution and I want to do the, you know, I want to know the end goal and where I want to, you know, jump ahead 10 steps. It teaches me again and again to stay with the intelligence that is built into this moment, and then the next as it unfolds. And that's actually the place where I can be with both what I know, what I feel, what's, you know, appearing for me, and I open up to the unknown. And that there is a level of intelligence that is built in, as you said, into reality when I can meet life in that way, when I can be with what I know, what I feel, what appears, my thoughts, these kinds of things, and I open up to the mystery. And that's actually how the next thing appears itself. And it's so fascinating because when you read and you just feel the creative process, you, anyone in this group who does painting or does or any kind of art form at all, you experience that. You know, you may have an idea that you're going to paint a tree or a sunset if you're a landscape person, or you may have an idea that you want to paint a particular set of feelings. But what happens is when you actually put paint, you know, on the brush and you go to the canvas, you find that something emerges that is different. It can be vastly different from what you thought would emerge, or it could be just a little different. It could curve you in just a little way, and you find light appearing in a certain way that you didn't expect of the canvas, and you find yourself surprised in a different way by what happens. And it turns out that that is that creative intelligence that appears when we do art forms is actually the creative intelligence that's available to us in every moment when we're working with things that are conflicts or a problem or a difficulty in our life, and when we're working with our desires and our longings. It turns out that's the creativity of life itself. And we get to participate in it. And it's also a co-creative process. We feel reality informing us in all kinds of new ways, and it's not just all up to us to sort it out. But we don't get to experience that unless we're willing to feel the things that appear, because there's also the place where I know I put the paintbrush, you know, I dip it in the paint, or I'm even standing on looking at the paint going, well, I thought I was going for yellow, but now I feel like blue and maybe a little mixture of the red, and, you know, maybe I'm really after purple. And then I'm staring at the canvas and going, I have no clue what to do next. I have no clue what's going to happen. I thought I was going in this direction, and now I'm lost. Now I'm confused. The willingness to be there with each of those things. So that softening that you're describing, Sarah, is so important, that evolutionary, that movement, that it's all not just within your personal grasp or your personal, you know, if I can't comprehend it, you know. But Sarah, I bow down before you, seriously, the way you described it, exquisite.
Thanks, Brenda. And I just want to let you know, you did that psychic thing I did. I took watercolor this semester. And one of the things that I found, I mean, there are so many. I could write a book on how many things I discovered about watercolor. It's just not putting paint on a brush and daubing. But you actually have to walk away from the painting.
You absolutely
do. You have to
do.
Come right away from it. And wet paint and dry paint, two totally different things. And if you
two totally different things.
You have to let it dry. Otherwise,
yes.
You don't know what to do next.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Something else emerges when you let it sit and not just push at it, you know, and try to, you know, make it happen, but do something and you have that pause and that reflection while it dries. Turns out that's the same thing in life. You know, we have to let it pause and dry and soften and something else emerge. But it's hard with the human ego that has an idea, has a goal in mind. And it's not that we give up goals because we're going to paint, you know, or we're going to do whatever the process is that we're in. So we're not giving up goals, But as the line in the Magi process says, do not make plans, do not let plans make you, meaning that we're going to do that, and we're also not going to get so carried away by it that we don't let something new emerge, that we don't let ourselves discover something in the process, that we don't participate in the great creativity of reality. So, beautiful. I'm liking
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, Brenda.
Thank you. Anyone else like to share the difficult and the challenging or the excitement or both?
Brenda, it's Candy. Can you hear me?
I can, Candy.
I was just thinking about a physical experience when you're snorkeling or scuba diving near the shore and it's surgy. And you want, and I want to see a particular thing, some animal or something that I'm looking for. If you hang on to the rocks and try to stay in one place where you think the thing that you want to see might be, mm-hmm. you get tossed around, and yet you can't just simply be limp and not be oriented in the water, but you have to find this way of being taken with whatever the water wants to do with you, but still maintain your own self and a sense of looking and being, of wanting to see what you want to see or wanting to see something. So it's this physical, for me, it's a very physical metaphor for that feeling of, I can't control this, but I have to still be me, and I still have to show up, and I have an idea of what I might happen, but I know it won't happen exactly that way, and I have to be okay with that and not resist it and be with the movement of something mm-hmm. way bigger than me, but still be me and still be writing myself while I'm not trying to stay still or
mm-hmm.
not struggling to stay still.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Again, beautifully said. I mean, and I love the metaphor because it's that metaphor of being able to be firm, meaning being located, being present, being exactly where you are, and simultaneously being flexible, being fluid. It's that paradox. And so we can't disappear into just the fluidity and get lost and, like, it doesn't matter what happens and it doesn't matter and we kind of go that way. Nor can we get lost in the trance of I want what I want, period. And that's the only where I'm going to stand is where I am. And anything else that happens, you know, and we've all experienced moments where that was true, where we've wanted what we wanted so bad that, you know, a glorious sunset can appear in front of us, but, hey, we wanted what we wanted, which was our friend to show up with us, and we're angry and we're unable to enjoy the sunset because we're so focused on the thing that we wanted and it happening or not happening that we can't enjoy life. So it's a beautiful metaphor that you're describing because it really is that great paradox, and it's a tension that it creates in our system because we want to go to one side or the other, and yet really, you know, life, you know, in its great wholeness is going to emerge in being with both.
And to take that metaphor a little further, I may have something in mind that I'm looking for when I'm going along the rocks. And I may end up seeing something that I don't even imagine exists,
mm-hmm.
which I would have, like there's going to be, I'm going to be shown, I may be shown something else. That if mm-hmm. I'm so willful about, this is what I came here to do, and
mm-hmm.
come hell or high water, I'm going to do it. Whereas if I hold the intention of the idea of why I'm there,
mm-hmm.
but I'm willing to let, I'm willing to be taken as
mm-hmm.
I am,
mm-hmm.
not taken as I am by something else, but taken along as I am,
mm-hmm.
then I can
mm-hmm.
often, then I'm often shown something that I never even imagined, which
mm-hmm.
is,
mm-hmm.
for, you know,
mm-hmm.
in the terms of making a decision making, you know, I don't know, is it Byron Katie said, a decision isn't something you make, it's a gift that comes to you, it's a gift
mm-hmm.
that's given to you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
How do I mute myself again?
Star 6. Yeah, I can tell a personal story that matches what you said, Candy. My husband, some of you know my husband, who great love of my life, but he'd been a friend of mine for 5 years, and I couldn't see him. I even had psychic friends say to me, "You know the man that you're going to be with." I'm like, "I don't know him. I have no clue who he is." And I had these really strong ideas and images of who I was going to be with. And my husband didn't match those images in my head. He was a good friend. He was many other things, but he was not he was not the images in my head. And there was a lot of healing work I had to go through till I could get to the place where I really could be clear on what was true about the core of what I wanted, not just these ideas and images, until I could finally actually see him, see exactly who he was. And then our relationship moved very quickly from there. We were married within a few months of that revelation. But, you know, life has that those funny ways of showing you that, you know, you may be clear, but maybe you're not as clear as you think. So.
You can be. You may be clear, but you may be wrong.
Well, there's that. Exactly. Exactly. So, okay. Anyone else want to share before I go on to the next piece?
This is Tim.
Hi, Tim.
Okay. some of this is old news that I had talked about in the group. But over the weekend, it really started after I watched a movie called The Judge. I don't know if any of you have seen that. And it's really about a father-son relationship. And essentially, the weekend, kind of one of those weekends that everything goes wrong. And the family lineage is that on the maternal side, my aunt and my mother, there were 10 children. 9 of those died, except me. And I woke up on Monday morning and was frustrated, and the thought entered my mind, I wish I never had been born. And I felt a certain sense of survivor's guilt, and yet the ambiguity was that I was born, and there's a purpose in that, that mm-hmm. I am searching for.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just kind of a profound day of knowing I existed and yet at the same time wishing I hadn't been born.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really about it. It was holding those two things together, kind of existence and non-existence,
mm-hmm.
and kind of wondering why me, if there's any rhyme or reason to that,
mm-hmm.
and kind of deciding there was, and what was what we're all doing tonight, and we had all done over the 4 years, that became kind of my great purpose is to know myself in the world and do that in somewhat of a tribute to those that did not make it into life.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of my preoccupation that I thought I'd just share. I don't know if it meets the criteria of ambiguity, except in terms of living and not living and somehow being chosen to live. And what a privilege that is, and what do I do with it? So I'll mute myself.
Yeah,
and one thing, if you could repeat that phrase you started with from the quantum physicists, I got one of them, the opposite of a great tree is another great tree, but there's another quote I really liked, and I didn't catch it.
Okay.
So,
sure.
Anyway, star six, and that will do it.
Thank you, Tim.
Okay. Bye-bye
thank
now.
Thank you, Tim. Bye. So the two quotes, Tim, were the opposite of a great truth is another great truth. And the second one was the truth can only be found in paradox. You know, what you said was so profound and precious. You know, it is part of the uncertainties of life. Why do certain things happen? Why are certain people born into certain types of circumstances and others born into other types of circumstances are things that philosophers have debated for generations, you know. And many people come up with answers from karma to whatever. But, you know, to be with the paradox that you're describing where there's a place in you that doesn't want to be here, and clearly a place in you that has chosen to be here fully and to show up in your life and to show up and help others in life. So I just say thank you for sharing and allowing it to be there and being with the uncertainty of that. So... So I'd like to talk about how this moves us then into the bracketing process. We begin the Magi process by having a question we'd like to answer, a desire we would like to see manifest, a conflict, whether inside of ourselves or outside in the world, we'd like to resolve. Or when we simply want to find out more about a dilemma, a challenge, a desire we're facing. So it basically can begin anywhere. Equally valid starting points are things like, that are very personal, like how do I find a way to not be so angry? Or how do I find a way to live my life more fully? Or how do I find a partner? Or how can I be happy in my life? Or it could begin with more issues that have to do with the world, but also include us, such as how do I help change racism in this country? Or the lack of tolerance for others who are different? Or how can I see a way through this particular personal issue around my job? Or around my relationship with my sister or my mother or my brother or my friend? Or how can I be more successful in the work that I'm doing? Or how can I find work that makes me happy? Any of these things are equally valid. Practically any starting place, whether question, statement, is a valid place to start. I'd actually say any place is a valid place to start. Because it automatically begins the first step of the Magi process, the one that we that happens before the 38 steps, called bracketing. Bracketing is simply an expression, the way that we describe a process in which we both are seeking to clarify what we're trying to say, as Lana described, where she thought that she was starting with dating more and became more about her confidence in other places. We're both trying to clarify what we're trying to say, and we're simultaneously allowing that question or statement to be changed in some way, because we come into relationship with ambiguity. The ambiguity of the question itself, the ambiguity built into life, the uncertainties. We allow our hearts and minds to be transformed right along with our questions. We may start in a place of great uncertainty where we don't know what to do, or a place of great certainty where we feel we know exactly what should happen, or anywhere in between. But what we're willing to do is engage into a living relationship or process with our questions or our statements. It's not frozen or fixed, but it's alive, and we seek to be present with whatever appears. So again, I'm going to just describe this process, and then I'm going to tell you about one that I did. I'm going to lead you through it and just see how it plays out here. Asking a question or statement immediately initiates us into the ambiguity of life, such as, is what I want really for the best? What will happen if I get what I want? Why do I want this? Is this really what I want, or is there something else that's more core or central to it? We can all remember times in our lives, excuse me, and it could have been yesterday or even this morning, in which we were absolutely certain we knew what should be the right outcome. But we can also remember times through hindsight we realized that the person we thought we should be with, the job we thought we should have, the college we thought we should go to, the place we thought we should visit, and we wound up being grateful. It didn't wind up going that way. We were actually happy that life took us in a different direction than what we initially thought everything was dependent upon it going in that direction. Hmm. But once we leave that, you know, the benefit of hindsight, and we're just here in the moment, meeting the questions, we realize that there's no exact or precise way that we can know from point A to point Z, that we have to be willing to follow the moment, the place. We can have an idea of where we want to land, but we have to be willing to go through the journey to discover something in each moment, to know something. And that actually many decisions of our lives involve being willing to be with the shifts and changes and the way it's going to transform us and reveal something new to us. Bracketing is a very thoughtful process. It brings our attention, as Sarah was talking about, to the reality that we do not always know and cannot, in fact, fathom or know with certainty all the things that should happen or where they should go. So bracketing takes this into account right from the very beginning. In most problem-solving techniques or moving towards desires and manifestation, we often try to reduce uncertainty. We try to cut away what we think is non-essential until we find the truth or what feels clear. But the Magi process seeks a different way of doing this, a form of skillfully engaging in a relationship with the nature of reality as it is. It accepts that reality is nuanced, subtle, ambiguous. Clear answers can be found, clear direction can be found, problems can be seen through. We can gain insight, revelation. We can move into a place where we really do make choices, make decisions, and feel enlivened and whole, and that it's the right thing for us and the right thing in relationship to life. But we do so through including more of doubts and confusions and uncertainties and questioning, not through cutting away things in order to get to clarity. We're willing to become informed and transformed by bringing to consciousness our fears, our doubts, our demands, our control, our stubbornness, our hopes and dreams, and we become intimate with ourselves. The Magi process is not a reasonable process, as in pure logic, any more than the seasons of winter, spring, summer, or fall are reasonable. No, we don't know, despite that it says on the calendar June 22nd is when summer appears. The truth is, we don't know when summer appears. The days are, you know, we have an idea, but some days, you know, summer begins to appear in certain places in April, and then, you know, in other years, it's still cool and cold, and it doesn't appear until fully in June, where we feel, oh yes, now it's summer. Now it feels like summer. It's got, you know, everything blossoming. It's not reasonable, but it is a natural process. For it works with the natural unfolding of reality. It works with the intelligence of life, the intelligence of life that is naturally in relationship to everything else. It's the intelligence in which we allow everything to exist as it is, that we let ourselves know and feel what we actually feel, and we don't demand that we push ahead, that we're smarter, brighter, wiser, more clear than we actually are. And we include when that appears, when that demand that we be, you know, wiser, smarter, more clear. We let that be. But we also don't diminish ourselves as being small or little and powerless. We let those feelings arise, but we don't get lost in them, thinking that's the whole truth of what's going on. So before I share a bracketing process that I did this week, I actually did a number of them, but before I share this one, I want to see if there are any questions about some of the things that I said. I've said a lot. You have in the, if you downloaded the PDF about the Magi process talks about the bracketing process. Some of it's the language I've used, some of it's other language to describe it, but it talks about the process. And what we have to do in working with it. Questions like allowing yourself to be with, am I selfish? Is this the authentic next step? Does this include what's really here? Or am I cutting something else out? So I would encourage you to read what I wrote about the bracketing process that was included in the packet before you start to work with it this next week. I wanted to bring some of it in and to then talk to you about the one I actually did, which will give you some insight into how it works. So, since my star 5 doesn't seem to be ready, whoa, it worked that time. Yay me. Okay. So everyone's unmuted for the moment, and if it gets too loud, I'll mute you again, and you can, again, just push star 6. But I'd like to check in, since Daniel has been my dialogue partner last week and this week. Ooh, it is a little loud. I'm going to push it back again. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, so you can unmute yourself, star 6, but he was getting a little loud very quickly. I'm not quite sure what that was about. But anyway, so I've muted everyone again. But again, you can unmute star 6. Star 6 also mutes you back. But Daniel, I'd like to check in with you first, since he's been my partner last week, as I said, and this week. And I'd like to see, Daniel, any Any comments, questions, thoughts about what I had just said about the bracketing process?
Well, I love the way you return to the including process,
mm-hmm.
which you started much of this with on our first session, that it's deeply through including, like you said, our doubts and confusions or uncertainties. My own experience is that tending to cut away often arises. You know, for me, for example, I'm completing new work. And then the yearning to change or to grow, I encountered a part of me that absolutely doesn't want to do any of that. Thank you very much. Wants to know very
mm-hmm.
clearly what it'll be like before I get there and how things are going to go, and that's already in charge. So there's immediately this clash of wanting to move and yet wanting to be there or in charge and knowing. You know, it's like you started us with the quotes from Niels Bohr. One that stands out for me is that, not a quote from him, but just a notion from physics, is that when there's resistance, when we encounter resistance, it inherently means that there's movement happening. We should take resistance as a sign that we should stop or turn the other way, when really it's a sign that we're starting to engage the process of growth and change.
Mm-hmm.
And so the resistance itself is a sign or an invitation to carry on in that process.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Well said. It's true. We usually take certain things like our resistance to being there, to showing up with it, as a sign we shouldn't do it. Or we take our confusion or our doubt as a sign we shouldn't go there. And it's hard for us to be with, you know, both our bravery and our fears, our uncertainties and our certainties, our resistance and our willingness to move forward. So, yeah, absolutely. Anyone else would like to, I'm opening it up again, star 6. You can unmute yourself. Is there anything you'd like to share or a question you'd like to ask about what I've been talking about so far tonight?
Brenda, just to ask a question, how do we get the Magi process? Don't we go to your website?
In the email that was sent to you, confirmation, it included
yeah.
a button for you to included a place for you to click and get the PDF that had the information.
Okay.
Kathleen, I have your email. I can send it to you. So I'll just send it to you.
Thank you. Well,
okay.
I can even check to see if maybe I didn't delete it. But thanks, Brenda. I didn't see that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you could send it, because I want to click it. Thanks, Brenda.
Uh-huh.
Brenda, this is Barbara.
Mm-hmm.
Going along with what you were just saying, I noticed it this week, but it's been something that seems to be habitual for me, is that resistance seems to be a prelude to my then taking some steps and moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's like they say sometimes, I was thinking of this, I remember when my daughter was nursing my granddaughter, and just around the time she was thinking about weaning her and beginning to a little bit, the baby wanted to hold on more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about that, about myself. I've noticed it, that I do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I do take that resistance when I don't want to deal with it. It's like,
mm-hmm.
okay, so I guess I'm not supposed to do this because I'm holding back. I'm dragging my feet at moving ahead,
mm-hmm.
so I guess I'm supposed to. And then, of course, I judge myself for that.
Right, right. Barbara, I always think a good example of that is, think about the moment in which you're getting ready to give birth to your baby, Mm-hmm. How many women, of millions of women, have said, no, 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 stop it. I don't want to have this baby.
Yes.
I don't want to be here.
Yes.
How many women have said that, you know? Probably every woman, you know, who's given birth. It's this, because immediately there's this resistance to it. It's like, you know, not these contractions, not this, you know, process. No, you know? And, again, anything in life that's it's there. Sometimes it feels minor, you know, sometimes it's kind of a blip on our radar and it just
goes on.
But other times it feels, it's very intense, like giving birth. No, I don't want to do this. Go back in. And yet I've never known a doctor to say, you're right, go on home. You don't have to give birth today.
Yes. But it's just interesting that, because I haven't played with this too much this week. I've been very busy, and I had a doctor's appointment last week, so I missed about half of this session, and I started listening to it a little bit this afternoon, but it was just a few days ago that I was noticing and thinking about other times in my life when I do that. You know, I take that resistance to mean I'm not supposed, the universe is telling me something, I'm not supposed to do it. When it's really about more about my fear of doing it, whatever it is.
Well, again, if we think about birth, we use that as the metaphor.
Yeah.
There is, again, the great paradox that there is something that wishes to emerge, called a baby, that wishes to be born, while simultaneously there's the resistance to be born.
Yeah.
That's the great paradox.
Yeah.
And it's true.
Yeah.
So, yes, I know. Many, many, many times we've all convinced ourselves of that. Exactly. So, thank you, Barbara.
You're welcome.
Okay. Anyone else like to share? Star 6 to unmute, and then you can push star 6 and mute yourself back. But star 6, love to hear.
Barbara, this is Yvette. Oh, Barbara, I mean Brenda. I'm so sorry. Brenda?
Okay.
I just want to add something else about resistance that Barbara was mentioning. I also find that when there is too much resistance in me to do something, I also need to honor the fact that I'm resisting.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to also ask the resistance what it is that it's trying to tell me.
Mm-hmm.
And many times, if I am patient with myself and kind enough with myself to take a step back and say, okay, I'm resisting here, I'm resisting too much, something is in the way, and I need to find what is in the way. And I usually, something opens up. And I don't have a specific example to mention, but I have found out that many times that a resistance is also has the wisdom in it to tell you don't push too hard.
Absolutely, that the resistance always has wisdom in it. We shouldn't make the assumption that it's saying don't go there, but it always has intelligence in it. It's speaking to us of our fears of what we think will happen, our resistance to the fact that the world is ambiguous and that it might go in a direction we don't want it to go in. That we don't feel ready to move forward. And so sometimes we have to back up a step, and it shows up when we do the bracketing. Sometimes we think we're ready to go do X, Y, Z. You know, I'm ready to go out and talk to 1,000 people, you know, as an example. We might start out to have that. And what the resistance has us do is take a step back, pause, and go, well, you know, maybe it would be helpful to talk to 2 people first. You know, it doesn't mean do nothing, but it also doesn't mean necessarily go as far as I was thinking about going. Or it means that maybe I need to find a new relationship to my fear of public speaking, and maybe I need to do some things to support myself with public speaking, like people have done in the histories of Toastmasters and other things. But what it does is it always has intelligence, and you're right. We want to learn. We want to discover what's in there and engage with it, and things do open up. So we don't want to force past the resistance, nor do we want to just say, okay, that's a sign, don't go there. We want to inquire into it, engage with it, again, in the spirit of the full bracketing process of where we're willing to learn something as we engage with it.
Yes, so. it also teaches you to be patient in areas where...
where we all struggle with? Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then,
you know,
it opens up. It does.
Right.
It opens up when you stay. You just simply sit with the this thing that you don't want to have in you, but
right.
You sit with it, and you become patient. And then, you know, you wait and see something else opens up. It really does.
Right.
Yeah.
Well said. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else like to share?
Carol, it seems to me sometimes that
I want to ask a question. This is Inez.
Carol was speaking first, Inez.
Okay.
So if I can let Carol go first, and then I'll come to you, back to you, Inez. Carol.
Okay. Oh, I was just thinking sometimes. To me, I notice resistance, and I stop it. It really does mean turn around, go the other way.
Sometimes it does mean that. But again, rather than assume that it means that, if you're engaged with it as a living process, not as a frozen thing. Because when we take it as a frozen thing, then we think it means the same thing every time.
Oh, okay.
But if we engage with it as a living process, then yes, sometimes it can indeed mean don't go there, go in another direction.
Okay. And I see, because sometimes you, one time I was going on a vision quest and it's like they're famous for, like, right when it's time to go get on the airplane and go, there's every reason in the world not to go comes
mm-hmm.
up.
Right. That often happens, you know. And again, it doesn't necessarily mean that, and yet it can mean that. Again, that's what it means to be in a living process. It can mean
okay.
many different things. So... It's great.
I can
thank
mute
you,
myself back. I punched *6 to mute myself.
*6. Yes. Thank you, Carol.
Brenda,
okay.
Barbara again. I just wanted to say what I find that this resistance is kind of like a yellow caution light.
Mm-hmm.
As you said, it just kind of, if I'm paying attention to it, not giving into it, sometimes I do give into it, but if I'm paying attention to it, it's really there to caution me to look beneath it, to see why I'm resisting. And then I might come up with, yeah, it's something I shouldn't be doing now, or maybe there's something underlying it that's stopping me, which is maybe usually, like I said, my fear of doing something.
Right.
But it's kind of like a caution signal.
Right. I would call it a pay attention more than a caution, but I'm okay with caution. So
pay attention.
Fine.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. Denise?
Okay. You know, we talked about resistance a lot, and what this brings up in me is, of course, I have resistance, but something that happens to me, you called upon that during our supervision session, is I do this with confusion. It's like, so can we treat, I mean, I know the answer is going to be yes. So it seems like confusion for me is similar to resistance. So it's like if I don't want to go somewhere, so I all assume it's like I'm confused. So my question is, can you say all the things you said about resistance for confusion?
In your case, I certainly can. And I can say that happens for a number of people, so it's not just your case. But I know for myself, in my history, I would tend to say I'm confused, and it was just a form of resistance. And I discovered in many cases the resistance was to feeling a particular thing, whether that was my anger, whether that was my not knowing what to do, whether that was my powerlessness, which Lana named earlier. But often for me, confusion was a form of resistance. It was, you know, I'm confused, so I don't have to do anything. And it would keep me frozen because, you know, until I learned to work with it in the ways we're talking about as resistance, and then I began to discover what was in it, whether that was my fear of anger, whether that was my fear of fear, whether that was, but it usually was something I didn't want to be in relationship with, something I didn't want to actually feel.
Well, thank
you.
Yes. That's what's going on with me, and it's just like it's easy to say I'm confused and then just drop it and not go there. Yeah.
Right. Right. Right.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. So because of time, I'm going to take you through and tell you a little bit about a bracketing process I did this week so that you can work with the bracketing process this coming week. This is an issue that I've worked with many times, and each time I do it, something new emerges. And I've worked with this particular issue because it is a world issue, and there are many different aspects to it. And basically, it has to do with the earth and has to do with it's connected to pollution, it's connected to GMOs, which Lana named, it's connected to water shortages, it's connected to monoculture, it's connected to a lot of different things. So when I sat down with it this time, I started with what first arose was powerlessness, speaking of that. How can I, as one person, possibly help the earth to heal? The bracketing process is not a process of me getting an answer to that question. It's a process of allowing, as just as with the inviting everything in meditation, it's allowing whatever is there to be there. So, again, my questions, my doubts, confusions, and it's letting what I actually feel to be there and then opening up to the unknown. So how can I, as one person, possibly help the earth to heal? How can I help humanity to heal our relationship with the earth when we cause so much destruction? What would a loving relationship with the earth look like at this point in time? What would it mean for the earth and humanity to heal in our relationship? Would it change the issues of pollution and issues of water shortage, the oceans rising? What would it actually do? What would the solutions be that would appear? What would it look like for us to change our relationship with the earth from treating the earth as an object or even as a resource we can use as we want to one of seeing the earth as sacred and our relationship with the earth also is one as sacred? And then it surprised me. I dropped down to another level and it became more personal. And I said, and what appeared was, how does our relationship or lack of relationship with our own bodies affect our relationship with the earth, of how we treat the earth, that we take food into our body that is toxic and isn't healthy, and yet and we do the same thing to the earth. We fill it with chemicals and toxins, and we push for it to produce food and water and overtax certain areas with the water and monoculture. What would happen if I felt the beauty and the preciousness of the earth, and I also felt the beauty and preciousness of bodies, my own body every day? How would it change my day-to-day activities? How would it change humanity's day-to-day activities? Somehow they feel connected to me. I want to have an authentic relationship with my body and with the earth. I want to waken to the ways I cut off the preciousness of this human form and the preciousness of the human earth body. I know my relationship with my own body has been mixed, sometimes honoring, sometimes abusive. It was a seat of a lot of battles with my mother's issues of control and the way she alternately expressed her love and her control around food and body. And then it took another twist back to the earth about how do we honor the cycles of the earth, the actual seasons and the movements and the tides. What does it mean to honor the cycles and the seasons of one's own body, of the aging process and the ways that we fight aging? And yet, what does it mean to be healthy as we work and we age and we change? What does the earth really need at this time for human beings to do, to engage with? What does it mean for us to change our attitudes? How can, and then it took another turn. How can I even work with this without just getting depressed or feeling powerless or helpless, and yet include my not knowing what to do, the ambiguity, the uncertainty of and the feelings of powerlessness? How can I include that without getting lost in it? And then I thought about it's a reflective process, and what appeared to me was something that Thomas Berry, who likes to call himself, who used to call himself an eco-theologian or an earth scholar, and he says that an absence of the sense of the sacred is the basic flaw in many of our efforts at ecologically or environmentally adjusting our human presence to the natural world. As long as the natural world remains as a commodity to be bought and sold and not as a sacred reality to be venerated, then nothing we do is going to really change things. And then it dropped, it started dropping to me. And I said, you know, in the Magi process, it says that there's light woven within dark places, and both are needed. Treating the earth as a commodity feels like a very dark place of contraction and a lack of relationship in which we think we can just do whatever we want, like little gods and little children running around, and that we can just do whatever the hell we want. What then might be the light that's woven within this? And then I dropped to it, and what came out is a clear question for me. It didn't come out as a statement. It came out as a question. And this was the final question I came to before I took it into the 38 steps. How can I come into relationship with the darkness that is here, the suffering that is present in our relationship with the earth, with the body of the earth, and our own bodies, and simultaneously open to the healing opportunities that are also possible here and now? How can I accept that I have both a limited view and open up to the unknown? It's the place that I landed. This landing place isn't idealistic. It's not a place of just pure clarity. I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't know what the right thing is to do, and yet I want to open to what can I do? How can I be with it? How can I engage with it in a way that is healing, a way that helps? So that's where I landed. As I said, this is an issue I've worked with many times. This is the first time what appeared had things to do with our own bodies and how our relationship to our bodies and the body of the earth had a depth of similarity to it, something I hadn't seen before I did it this time. I'd worked with specific issues of water and pollution and, you know, and I've been in, and it's propelled me to be engaged in many different kinds of projects that have to do with the earth. You know, many groups who are out there doing different projects. But this took me into a completely different direction in which I realized there was a whole new relationship I needed to come into around human bodies and earth body. So it surprised me. It's not where I would have expected myself to land. That's part of what happens with the bracketing process. And yet it felt very whole and real and honest and authentic when I landed there. And this is what I took into the 38 steps. I'm just trying to give you the quality of it, see if you can get the feel of how it shifts and changes and becomes, even if you do a world issue, it tends to become very personal at some point, and then it begins to become more of, you know, universal at another point. If it's a personal issue, the same thing happens. It tends to be that I go through this place in which I'm very personal, I'm very clear on what I want to have, and then I start seeing how it plays out in the world and the humanity in a new way, and then it comes back to myself personally. So it tends to, the inner and the outer tend to move and shift as I go through the bracketing process. And again, it's not rushing to some kind of resolution. I could have had a statement. I could have had it wound up with a statement which said, I want to come into relationship with the darkness that's here, the suffering that's present in our relationship with the earth. It could have been a statement, but it didn't feel, for me, a question is what felt honest, and so that's why I landed there. You might land with a statement. You might land with a question. You might land with a series of it might not even be a full sentence. It might be a few words. But it's that willingness to go through the journey of it and then land in a place that feels clear and true and honest, but not clear as in it wipes out ambiguity, but clear as in this is where I really am right now. This is what feels authentic, real, and I feel here in this. I feel present with it. I feel like I included my doubts, my confusions, my lostness, my resistance, my powerlessness, everything that actually was there. And I landed in a place that included all of those things. So I will now ask you to push star 6 and tell me if you have questions. I realize that's a lot that I just said, but I think if you get the quality of it, of what it feels like to actually go through that journey. So star 6, anyone have a question or a comment? This is what I'm going to have you work with this week. It can be a personal issue, a personal desire, a personal conflict, a personal place you want to be. It can be a world issue, like I just talked about. It can be anything that appears, and it could be more than one thing. You could work with a couple. I would encourage you not to work with too many. Don't overwhelm yourself by working with 20 things. You know, 1, 2, maybe 3, if that feels like you've got the space and the spaciousness to do it. You need to give yourself enough time to do it. It's a reflective process, so you want that pause in there where you just sit, like we talked about, let the paint dry. Sometimes you walk away from it and come back. So this is the process. Star 6, I want to open it up. Are there any questions or thoughts as you hear this?
Hi, Brenda. This is Sarah.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi. So one of the things that I found in doing the bracketing process that helps me to keep from sort of going down the slippery slope of story and, you know, kind of circling around within a familiar story is to use phrases rather than complete sentences.
Okay.
So that it kind of, for me, breaks up the subject object connection. It tends to interrupt story and make room for me to consider different many more possibilities.
I think that's great, Sarah. I mean, I can definitely see how that would be true, because by having a little bite, if you will, like angry over or whatever the little bite is. Instead of getting more story added to that, you can move more easily from one thing to another. So it becomes, you know, one step to the next step to the next step. So I can absolutely see how that works. The opposite is actually true for me because, again, this is the great paradoxes. If I do fragments, I tend to skip over something. I don't tend to get lost in story. It's not my big thing. My big thing tends to be that if I say one thing and I don't actually unpack it a bit, then the I say it, but the powerlessness I actually feel doesn't come up. I don't actually feel the powerlessness. I've skipped over it. So I think you have to figure out what works for you. But I love that you're bringing this forward, because that may be true for someone else in the group, that's what they'll find, that they're better off just naming a few. I forgot how you framed it exactly. What were the words you used?
I use phrases, right. Sort of almost like free associating rather than full
right.
sentences. I usually kind of avoid full sentences that tend to take me back into a loop.
Right. So again, you've named a way that really works for you, and I think it's great. I think it's fantastic, because I think everyone has to notice these subtleties of how we freeze things rather than let it be a living process. And freezing it can include, by adding big sentences, you can get really looping, and lost in, you know, what you try to have happen, what you think is going to happen, you know, the great, you know, projecting into the future, and getting lost in the past. So that can be absolutely a great way. Again, to me, it's different. I just don't happen to have that particular thing that I do. It's more that I'll skip over a feeling, you know, like powerlessness, like anger, and unless I unpack it a little, I don't actually feel that.
Great, thanks.
Thank you. I love it. Thank you.
Brenda, this is Irma. I notice and have some vague memory doing this years ago, of doing it mostly in question form as opposed to statements, and I noticed that in years too. But there were some statements that were interspersed. Can you just address that for a minute in terms of?
Well, again, it goes back to what Sarah said, because any way we enter the bracketing process is fine, but we will find subtleties for ourselves. You will find, maybe subtly for you, if you ask questions, it allows you to keep moving to the next thought or the next feeling or the next thing that appears, instead of getting frozen. And so questions might be that's what happens to you. Just like for Sarah, phrases allows her to do that, allows her to move from one thing to, you know, allows her to, you know, step on the lily pads and for the next thing to appear. So I think that can be a legitimate way that it becomes mostly questions. For me, it's usually a mixture. It is usually a mixture of questions and statements. Sometimes it can be just statements, but mostly for me personally, it's a mixture of both. But I think if you find, again, this is a subtlety, if you find that statements tend to leave you frozen, and not able to move to the next thing that appears, then stick to questions.
Yeah, okay. And you kind of know when you landed. That's my
memory. You
do.
You have
you
a
just,
feeling
you just
of,
know. Yeah.
It's what Sarah said earlier, you have a feeling that that's the next turning of the wheel. I think she framed it as the next step, but you have that feeling. It's like, this is the next turning of the wheel. This is the next day turning over. You can feel it, and it just has that feel of something shifted, something moved, and something landed. Again, for those who are doing it for the very, very first time, you may not feel that right away at this point. You may not know if you're landed, and that's completely fine. You just allow yourself to stop at some point and say, okay, that feels like enough, and that's fine. It's something that you will discover the more you do it, that it feels right. Usually it has some surprise in it. It's Lana, I keep using you as an example because what you said was so wise. You know, the surprise where you realize that it wasn't about your life path, it wasn't about your dating life, but it was about confidence in yourself. So it usually has surprise in it when you land. I was surprised where I landed. It wasn't what I started off from the beginning thinking it was going to be. It had some of that in it, but I actually landed in a very different place than I expected. That's usually when I know I've landed. I'm surprised.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is Rachel. I have some really practical questions. So, you know, the questions and the phrases, I mean, I'm assuming that I'm not just thinking and feeling, that I'm actually, is it an important part to be writing those down as I'm going to reflect on
it? Is, right. It is important that you do that. And it's an interesting thing, because if we just feel or just think it, it tends to be something that's like, you know, blowing a feather in the air. It disappears and it doesn't gather. So in many ways, this is like snowflakes gathering together, and they shift and they move and they reveal something new, like puzzle pieces in the air. But if we write them down, that's what happens. They gather together in one location, and they show us something different instead of just floating away.
And then my other question is, you know, in the beginning of this call when we were doing the meditation, you had us, you know, calling in different parts of ourselves. Mm-hmm. Do you think, is that an important thing to begin with too, before you kind of begin that process, so that all of that is available in the process?
I find that it can be in the beginning. You know, as you get more practiced at it, you don't need to do that. That's automatically, you find yourself going, you know, you feel the angry one, you feel the lost one, you feel the confused one. And I find it happens naturally. But I do find that the meditation, when we first start to work with it, it helps me to remember. It helps me not to just go to the idealistic, wise, you know, kind, compassionate person in me. It helps me to remember to include the places that I struggle with more, my demand, my control, my, you know, all those kinds of things. So, yes, I do find it can be a helpful practice to help me remember to do that.
And one more question. So is the question you begin the bracketing process with, like, something that organically shows up in that moment, or can it be something that we've been kind of struggling with?
It can absolutely be something you've been struggling with.
Okay.
It can be anything, and it doesn't have to be a question. It can be a statement. It absolutely can be something you've really been struggling with, something that is very present in your life and you've been struggling with for quite some time. Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
I love your practical questions. They're great.
Brenda, this is Ilana. I have a similar question.
Okay.
So the list, the series of questions and possibly statements that you read to us, how long elapsed between when you wrote down the first one and when you wrote down the last one? Was it days? Did you come back to it?
It can be. In this particular case, this particular process probably was about 25-30 minutes, and it happened all at once.
Uh-huh.
But I have, particularly when it's been a personal issue that I've wrestled with a lot, like was being named, I will often find that I do it for about 10 minutes, and then I can't bear it anymore, and I have to walk away, naming what Sarah said. I have to walk away and let the paint dry. And then I have to come back at it, which maybe I come back at it an hour later, or maybe I come back at it the next day.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or thoughts about this? Because I really want you to do this,
Brenda,
this week. Yes,
Brenda,
okay. Yes.
This is Yvette. I have a question for you. I have struggled many times with bracketing. And what I have done when I get completely discouraged, and it's a question to see if it's really valid, I have done the Magi process on this. In other words...
Right. That can be true. That can be a valid thing to do. However, I'm going to suggest not doing that this week. Because the other thing, backing that up, if I find it difficult to bracket, what I really need to bracket
is the fact that I feel it find it difficult to bracket.
Okay. That makes sense.
No, seriously. Sometimes that's what I have to back it up. So, like, I'm planning on dealing with a fight I'm having with a sibling, you know, and I can't deal with it. I'm just so furious. I'm filled. That's the case when I am filled with my story, Sarah, but I'm filled with emotion around it, and I just can't do it. And then I have to back it up. I have to back up because now what's appearing is my resistance to actually deal with it in that way. So this is my resistance, and I have to back it up, and I have to go, okay, so what's my resistance showing to me, and why don't I want to bracket? What is my fear around bracketing? And then I'll have to bracket that. I'm going, well, if I bracket, I'm afraid I'm going to come up with finding out that, you know, it's all my fault. Well, I'm afraid that if I bracket, I'm going to come up finding that it's not solvable. Okay, I don't want to deal with that. I find that if I bracket, I'm going to have to do something. I don't want to do anything about it. I want her to fix it. So you understand what I'm saying? You have to back it up. I'd rather you back it up and deal with the struggle with bracketing.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah, it's almost like being impatient and getting it over with.
Well, that's what I feel happens if you do that and you jump to the 38 mm-hmm. steps.
Right.
It can be a valid thing to do, but it often includes skipping over something. So I'd like you to back it up and deal with the resistance to bracketing itself. I don't want to actually feel this stuff. I don't want to actually go here. You know, whatever it is.
Yeah, okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Brenda, one more technical question. Once you're done and you've landed,
mm-hmm.
then you bring that final statement and read the 38 steps, right?
Correct.
Out loud, I think?
Well, no, you don't have to read them out loud. Now, I'm not really going into the 38 steps tonight because I want people who have never done the process tonight, I want them to just work with bracketing because it's going to get overwhelming to deal with the 38 steps. In your case, because you've done it, I would just say, yes, you can go through the 38 steps, but there are different ways to work with it, again, which is why I want to talk about that next week. There are ways that have to do with speaking it out loud. There are ways to have to do with it silently, and I'll talk about the benefits to each of those. So next week, right now, just work on bracketing.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's what I'd like you to do this week, to work on bracketing. If once you finish bracketing, you feel like for those who are here who've never worked with the 38 steps, if you feel like just reading the 38 steps after you've done bracketing without having a clue how it's going to work or what's going to happen, feel free to do that. You can just read them. But, you know, again, next week I'll really unpack the 38 steps and how to work with it. But for now, you know, you can just stay with bracketing. It's going to do a lot right there. It's going to be transformative and healing just to work with the bracketing. You'll be surprised. So you don't have to move ahead. You don't have to jump five steps ahead. Again, we'd like to do that. I get that. But you can just stay with bracketing. I often do the bracketing as a thing in itself and discover so much. So I encourage that. Okay.
Brenda, it's Daniel.
Yes, Daniel, sweetheart.
Well, let's say again that what we said before, that we might remind ourselves to meet with kindness and compassion what it is that may come up for us in the process of doing this.
Everyone hear that? what Daniel said is extremely important. You don't want to find yourself, well, if you find yourself doing it, if you find that, you know, anger comes up at yourself or you start to beat yourself up, invite in the one who wants to beat herself up or himself up. Invite in the one who thinks that there's a right way to do this and a wrong way to do it, the one who's afraid of making mistakes. Try to be kind. That's what inviting everything in means. It means that we're going to be kind to these places in ourselves. We're not going to demand that we be something that we're not. And it's a very subtle thing, but it exists so much in the world, and it exists so much inside of ourselves that we think we need to be
something different than where we are. So if we're confused, we think we have to move to clarity. If we're lost, we think we have to move to being found. So kindness and compassion is always, it's the first and the final revelation of any kind of healing work. Be kind. Last statement, be kind. Thank you, Daniel. And if you find you can't in that moment, and you find you're caught in that, give yourself that pause. Walk away from the process a little bit. Let yourself breathe and, you know, sometimes stepping into nature and feeling the accepting relationship of nature, you know. Sometimes that can be helpful, and then come back at it. But kindness is what we're after here. We're not after trying to force ourselves to do something. So, okay. So thank you all for being here. It's a delight, and it's a delight to be here with you, and thank you for your willingness to thank you for your willingness to engage with this process, this quirky, strange process. You know, it's an interesting, it's fascinating, these processes, because they're not just logical, which we tend to want just pure logic there, but they're actually extraordinarily creative and healing and whole. You know, they're like nature. Nature is, as I said, seasons aren't reasonable, but they're delightful, and they are healing, and they do what they do. They're organic, and this is a very organic process. So thank you for being with me here tonight. Thank you for showing up with each other.
Thank you, Brenda.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brenda.
Thank you, Brenda.
Thank you.
With more voice. Thank you.
It was. Thank you. All right, darling. So I'll see you next week. Thank you so much. Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you, Brenda. Bye.
Good night.
Good night.